64 today. Psalm 64.
We'll note once again that this is dedicated to the chief musician. It is a psalm of David, so we know the earthly author, but we don't know anything else about any particular situation in which the Lord placed him in order to have him ready to write down this, which is not only the word of David, but the word of God. And so we go on and read, "Hear my voice, O God, in my meditation. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret plots of the wicked, from the rebellion of the workers of iniquity, who sharpen their tongue like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the blameless. Suddenly they shoot at him and do not fear. They encourage themselves in an evil matter. They talk of laying snares secretly. They say, who will see them? They devise iniquities. We have perfected a shrewd scheme. Both the inward thought and the heart of man are deep. But God shall shoot at them with an arrow. Suddenly they shall be wounded. So he will make them stumble over their own tongue. All who see them shall flee away. All men shall fear and shall declare the work of God, for they shall wisely consider his doing. The righteous shall be glad in Jehovah and trust in him, and all the upright in heart shall glory." Well, this is not a psalm that, at least in our congregation, we commonly look at or even sing. But because it is the Word of God, and because it's in the Psalms, we hit it at least in meditation every about 3.5 years. Now, this psalm could fit in a number of different places in David's life. It could be while he is having trouble, potentially deadly trouble, with Saul. It could be the difficulty he was having under his son Absalom. It could be under many different situations. But what we see here is a break between verse 6 and 7. Verses 1 through 6 declare the enemy, the nature of the enemy, and then what the enemy is doing. And then verses 7 through 10 speak of God's assured deliverance. So very quickly, David is quite confident that God hears him. As he thinks about God's person and work, his faithfulness, his abiding to his promise, this is why he can call out, "Preserve my life from fear of the enemy." Now, what do? Well, they plot secretly. They use evil words. I've forgotten who it was I was talking to just the other day. Maybe it was one of you, saying about how my parents told me to say to bullies, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me." Well, sticks and stones can indeed break our bones, but words can hurt, and they can hurt badly. They may not break bones, they may not be doing things of that sort, but they can break the spirit. So these wicked words are not taunts necessarily or only, but they are words with one another as the wicked ones plot together to destroy God's anointed. In this, we can see how this psalm speaks of Jesus Christ. For he it is who had all kinds of plots and schemes against him. Even when he did his most amazing public miracle, when God used him in John chapter 11 to raise Lazarus from the dead, we see in John chapter 12 how the scribes and Pharisees gathered together to consult how they might kill him and get rid of the evidence by killing Lazarus. They had this mighty sign that they'd been urging Jesus to give. And they said, well, we can't have this. And so they were going to get rid of the evidence by violent means. And so they also seek not only to speak secretly, but to assassinate with arrows. Maybe it's verbal arrows, maybe it's literal ones. But in this, it's very similar to the hatred of the scribes and Pharisees that were glad to get the betrayal words of Judas and were glad to put Jesus to death in a torturous and in a cursed way. And so, despite the fact that they think everything's done in secret, God knows, God sees. And instead of them shooting an arrow, we see in verse 7, we see the assured redemption of God. God shall shoot an arrow at them. Suddenly they shall be wounded. And so we see how it was that surely Satan thought he'd gotten a great victory. He had put to death the Lord of life. But what happened was Satan was destroyed, and all his plots and all his schemes were overthrown. As had been told by God back in Genesis 3:15, at the crucifixion, the heel of the son of the woman, the seed of the woman, was bruised as Christ was crucified on the cross. But the head of the serpent was crushed. Just like we'd take a bug and crush it and then take our heel and grind it in, not carpet, I hope, but into the concrete, into the dirt. So it happened with Satan with his wonderful, he thought, scheme. It is because of the life, living a perfect life, an utterly righteous and without stain life, that is accredited to you and me, that we have righteousness to come before God. As I pointed out, I think, a couple of weeks ago, there are a couple of passages in Jeremiah where there is a promise of the coming of the branch, and his name is Jehovah Tzidkenu, the Lord, our righteousness. It is Christ who is our righteousness. And then the penalty that we have accrued, the penalty that we have earned by our sin, is taken by Jesus at the cross. By his active obedience, acting in a consistent, perpetual, and exacting way toward the law, he has given us righteousness, and by his death on the cross, making atonement, he has taken away the guilt, taken away the curse, by taking them upon himself. And so it's because Jesus did this that all this applies to us as well. It applies not only to David, but to us. Now, left to ourselves, without the person and work of Jesus, all we would have is curse, but we have none. Now, we may have discipline, and it often feels and looks the same, but it's not. As I've explained time and again, punishment is judicial retribution, and Jesus took that at the cross. There is never punishment, never spiritual punishment for the believer, because it's all done at the cross. Now, there may be hard providences. There may be difficulties, and I've quoted so often, not only here, but at Mary Rutan Hospital, from verse 19 of Psalm 34. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. Why are there many afflictions? It is to fit us for heaven. It is to make us feel hatred toward our sin and take away our longing and delight in the world, and to build up a longing and delight for that which awaits us. And so as we look at Psalm 64, when we have our troubles and our afflictions and sometimes persecutions, and I just suggested a Christian friend who is in a land where there is persecution, that she read and think about Psalm 64 for her encouragement. So we can too, when we are afflicted and we are under plots and schemes by the wicked, who cannot touch God, who cannot touch his anointed, but he can touch God's people and delights to do so. We can turn to Psalm 64. We can be, when we are oppressed by the wicked, we can rejoice in Jehovah. Well, let's sing this psalm. We're going to be singing at the first stanzas 1 through 6. This is approximately where that break is that I mentioned between verses 6 and 7. 64a, stanzas 1 through 6.